Tonight is no exception. We have some really special people here tonight that are going to blow you away with some of the stuff that God's doing in their lives. They're going to share with you. And they're really special as well because it's Mr. Crawford's daughter and son-in-law. You guys know Mr. Crawford, right? Give Mr. Crawford a hand. We love him. Just remind him because sometimes he's back there all alone. And so Catherine and Dave are going to come speak and share a little bit about what God's doing with them. Come on up, guys. Give them a welcome, too, as they come.
I forgot we were following Faith Faye from last week. I've been in some sweet home videos, though, so you guys look me up, too. Just kidding. Thanks for having me. My name's Catherine. Used to be Crawford. Now it's Hodge. We have a little family tree picture, if you guys could put that up to just kind of help you with the connections. My sister Hope Crawford just graduated last year, so you guys probably recognize her standing next to me, and then my parents in the middle. And then my brother, Matt Crawford, was working here up until like October, November of last year. And that's his wife, Christy. And then my other sister, Colleen, is there on the floor. So I grew up in this church. I sat in the seat you're sitting in from 7th grade through 12th grade. And then when I was about 17 years old, the church had another missions month, kind of like you guys just had in February. And I don't remember a lot of details about that month, but I remember being really excited by everything they were talking about. And then at the end of the month, they asked people to consider committing to full-time ministry, and which is a really vague term because like we're all evangelizing all the time. But the idea was that like you were going to work in the church or in the body of Christ in a specific way for your career. And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I definitely think that's what I'm supposed to do. And at the same time, I was really loving my anatomy class in high school. And I was like always reading ahead, and I knew that wasn't normal. And so I thought maybe I should try to be a doctor or a physician assistant or a nurse or something in the medical field. And so I went to the University of Central Florida in Orlando for undergrad. And then I finished that in 3.5 years and had applied to medical school, and I got accepted at the University of Miami. And I really felt then like, okay, I'm gonna be a missionary doctor. And I was really sure about that. But I was so burned out by the end of college because nothing came easy for me, and getting into medical school was really hard. So I took that year. Once I got accepted, I asked if they could let me wait for a year, and they did. And so I came and worked at MICS for 1.5 years, and I coached, and I traveled Europe, and I volunteered here when Fias was the youth pastor. And that was like a really, really fun 1.5 years. Hung out with Matt Woodside almost every night of the week. And we just had such a fun 1.5 years. By the end of that 1.5 years, I was super refreshed and ready for medical school. And so I do want to encourage you, like when you are feeling like you're following God's plan, if you hit that brick wall, it's okay to be refreshed. God blesses rest. So just keep that in your mind, especially for you type A people. So went off to medical school and graduated there. And I decided in medical school that if I wanted to be a missionary, a family doctor was the kind of doctor that probably would be most helpful for what I wanted to do. And so after you graduate medical school, you pick, do I want to be a surgeon? Do I want to be a pediatrician? Do I want to deliver babies? Or you could be a family doctor, which is like a little bit of everything. And I thought that would be helpful in the mission field. And so met Dave, and then we moved to Oklahoma after we got married to do a 3-year family physician residency program, which is what we just finished and had a baby this past July. And I'll let him kind of take over.
My name's Dave Hodge, and I grew up as well in Cape Canaveral, Florida. I actually went to Cocoa Beach High, and I taught there for about 5 years until we moved to Oklahoma. And so tonight we have two goals, and one is just to share what we want to do in Malawi, and then also what we want to encourage you guys to be more involved with spreading the gospel around the world. And so what we've got up is the theme that we've learned here at First Baptist. We attend now until we leave. And that's the one mission, one message, advancing the gospel throughout the world. And you guys, like you see in the door, you're entering the mission field. As you guys go out every day, you guys are interacting with non-Christians. And even Christians that you can disciple. Some of you guys are helping the middle school kids. And even just between friends, you guys are discipling each other. And those things are really important. And also in your families, if you have younger brothers and sisters. And then in your local community, in your schools. And then your friends that are outside of school as well. And then also outside of America, you can advance the gospel, or even inside America, we'll talk about people that come from outside of the world, like immigrants or people that are studying abroad. You can help to advance the gospel that way. So the way on the next slide, We're going to go to Malawi, Africa, which is Southeast Africa. Some of you guys may have heard about Madonna adopting a child. That child came from Malawi. And then the guy below Madonna is David Livingston, a really famous missionary from Malawi. In the next slide. Malawi is also famous for its hippos, which are the most dangerous animal in Africa. They will chomp you in half. The next slide. It also has a very beautiful lake. And so about a third of the country is actually a lake. It looks like the Great Lakes. On the next slide. So, but what Malawi is really known for, and this is the sad part, is being a country with a lot of people in extreme poverty. In America, in Europe, Japan, we don't have anyone in extreme poverty. Extreme poverty means you live on less than $2 a day. And 60% of their 16 million residents live on less than $2 a day. In fact, only 10% of the residents have enough money to afford electricity. And so you're talking about a country with a lot of poor people. If you're a doctor working in Malawi, you only make $1,000 a month. And things there actually cost more than things here. A car costs double what it would cost here. Things at the grocery store cost about four times the price that they would here. And you can't even buy certain things because there aren't enough people with money to buy them. So a nice mattress, you can't buy. A couch, you can't buy. There's just a lot of basic things that we would think are just normal that you can't get there. And so the people that are living on $2 a day, it's not like they're getting a wage. No one's paying them $2. They just make enough crops that at the end of the day, if they have a little bit of extra, they can sell that for, you know, about $360, maybe sometimes $700. And so when they have school costs or school fees, or they pay, like the hospital Catherine's going to work at, they'll pay like a dollar when they come, but they can't pay very much. And that's one of the things that leads to the big health disparities of not having a lot of people internal. And then, it's okay. So this would be a home for someone that makes about $2 a day. And so it's not very good. They may, you know, there's a lot of problems that come when your roof isn't contained. And when you hear stories of like Jesus' time when they cut holes through the roof and went down and saw Jesus, when you see a home like this, it makes way more sense because it's not very hard to like cut through their roofs. And so on the next slide that you'll see, we're not going to live in a mud hut, though. Our home's right here. It's about half this duplex. It's about 900 square feet. And so even though we'll be in a country of extreme poverty, we're that sort of upper 10%, even though we'll make less than we would if we lived in America. And so you guys will see how much money we'll have. Like at the end, we'll kind of go through like our budget and stuff like that. But we live in the middle of two worlds. We'll have less money than a lot of our American friends, but over there, you know, we're really wealthy. And so that makes it really challenging to spread the gospel because there's this huge disparity of wealth. And so that's something that we have to really become learners of how to do that. And I'll let Catherine share the medical needs.
Yeah, so we're actually leaving 7 weeks from yesterday. So June 10th, we have about 7 weeks left. We're going to go on June 10th, and we're staying for 3 years as our first term, and then we'll reassess and see is that still a great place for us to stay. Because wherever we go for our second term, we kind of want to be our third, fourth, fifth term. We want to raise our kids kind of in one area so they have a home as they're kind of growing up. So, and these medical needs I'm going to share with you, and I hope and pray that they're not just statistics because it's really hard to grasp the grief of it until you're there and you're seeing. And I know a lot of you have gotten to go to Guatemala, and so you have hope, maybe seen some extreme poverty examples or very, very close to it. So in Florida, we have the same amount of people as the country of Malawi, and we have 44,000 doctors in Florida. And we're always talking about a doctor shortage in Florida, and I'll be the 383rd doctor to be licensed in the country of Malawi. So most of the people who are doing medicine there are called clinical officers, and they have very little training, and they're asked to do way more than they know how to do, and they do the best that they can. But, you know, of course it means like there's a lot of bad outcomes for the patients. So there's 10% of the population has HIV, which is a virus that once you get it, you can never get rid of it. If you're in America and you get HIV, and you go to the doctor regularly and you take your medicines every day, you won't die of HIV. You probably won't even necessarily progress to any complications from it. If you take the medicines how you're supposed to, you'll die of a heart attack at age 90. Thankfully, the medicines have progressed. But in these countries, the medicines are entirely dependent on our other countries giving them money to be able to buy the medicines that week. So our country runs out of, or our hospital that we'll be working at runs out of the medicines for HIV every other month. And so the months that they run out, the virus gets to grow again, and then it gets resistant. And so there's all these crazy problems that you have trying to treat diseases that are completely treatable in America, but whenever money's an issue or getting access to the medicines is an issue, it suddenly kills 10% of the population. One out of 36 women die during pregnancy. And a lot of the women get pregnant 7 or 8 times. So this is a risk that they face every time. This is a really crazy stat because in America, if you die when you're pregnant or when you're delivering, it makes headlines. It's really unusual. Now, there, a lot of women have complications in pregnancy or during delivery, or they'll say, oh, it was so scary for a second. But like nobody almost ever dies. And it does happen sometimes, but it's pretty rare because it's really preventable. But there, it's just so hard. Like these women are delivering in villages. They don't have time to get to the hospital, and you never know when the baby's going to come. So there's all these crazy issues that we just don't have in countries like here. Because of that, out of the 16 million people in the country, 1 million of them are orphans, which is a really crazy amount of kids who don't have parents. A lot of that's from the HIV. A lot of it's from the moms dying in childbirth. Those are the two main reasons that these kids lose their parents. And so the country doesn't even have the ability to afford orphanages because those are structures and they require people and lots of money to run. So there are some orphanages there for sure, but mostly what they have are what's called feeding stations where the kids will end up living with extended family like distant relatives, and then they'll come get a hot meal a couple times a day from these feeding stations. So you can go ahead and go forward. In addition to HIV and moms dying in childbirth, the other big killer is a disease called malaria. And that's a parasite that gets into the blood, and mosquitoes spread it. And so we almost never have this in America anymore. And if we do, it's from someone that just got back from traveling overseas. But 40 to 60,000 people die every single year of malaria. And again, it's really, really treatable, but you have to treat it quickly enough, and you only have a couple days. So little kids are the most susceptible, and when they get bitten by these mosquitoes every single night, the parents just have a matter of days sometimes to get them to the hospital if they even have one within a day's walking distance. And so that's just a really big access to care problem. This is just an example of one of the feeding stations. You can keep going. One thing that we do that helps just a little bit, it's kind of like picking that, not the seashell, what are they called? You throw it back into the ocean? Starfish, yeah. It's like one of those examples where like we go out into the villages and we triage all these lineup of kids, all the moms line up with their babies, and the ones that look like this baby who doesn't even have the energy to lift his head, we put them back in the bus with us and we drive them back to the hospital because it's, you know, 3 hours away bus ride and they don't have an opportunity to get there. So that helps a little bit, you know, for the kid we go and help, but what they really need is just more doctors, more availability. This is not the inside of our particular hospital. I forgot to take a picture, but this is the typical inside of any African hospital. There's usually 10 to 12 people in a room, and you can see the bed nets hanging above the bed. Those get dropped down over the patients at night to try to protect them from the mosquitoes. The difference in an African hospital, several differences is, you know, in America, you'll have a nurse, you'll have a tech who comes and bathes you and takes your blood pressure and gives you the medicine. In Africa, all of that is left up to your family. And so when you come to the hospital, you also have to have extended family members who are coming and not working in the fields those days to come and bathe you, to bring you food, to buy your medicines for you. Almost none of that is provided at most African hospitals. Since we're a charity Christian hospital and we have a huge funder in South Korea who pays for most of that stuff, our hospital's a little bit better off. We at least usually buy the medicines for the patients, but they still have to get most of their food and bathing and all of that kind of stuff from family members. And so you can see there's not like extra chairs for the family members to sit in. So they're just like on the bed with the patient, under the bed sometimes. Like it's just kind of a crazy atmosphere. And keep going. And then kind of the last thing to wrap up, sort of what I'll be doing, I'll be working 5 to 6 days a week in the hospital, pretty much from like 7 to 7:30 a.m. till 4 or 5 p.m., taking call every now and then. But the really exciting thing that me and my team are getting to do is in Malawi and in a lot of countries in Africa, when you finish medical school, so Malawi does have a medical school, they graduate 50 people a year versus thousands and thousands in America. But in Malawi, they graduate 50 a year, but then they're done. That's as far as a doctor's training will go in Malawi right now. Whereas in America, after you finish medical school, you would kill so many people if you start practicing. Like, we don't, it's all book learning almost in medical school. So in America, you go to a residency program, which is where you train to either be a surgeon or a pediatrician or a, someone who delivers babies, that kind of thing. Well, they don't have that in Malawi. So if they want to get that training, they'll go to a couple other countries, but then they won't come back because their life is so much better there. They get paid so much more and they can send more money home to their family. So it makes sense for them not to come back. So Malawi really doesn't have anyone who's been trained who stays. So we asked permission with the Ministry of Health, which is the part of the government that oversees decisions like this, if we could start a family medicine training program this year, and they said yes. So this fall, somewhere around September, October, we're going to start training Malawian physicians who have just graduated their medical school to be family medicine doctors, and they'll have a official curriculum and a three-year training program just like I had that I just finished from. And so that's really cool because now we can, you know, train their own physicians to have real training after they finish, and then hopefully that program will grow and grow and grow just like it has in America, so they can be better off for that.
Something we wanted to do was to leverage this medical care to help share the gospel. And so one thing that's great about Malawi is it's easy to share the gospel. Some countries it's not as easy. And so it's a Christian hospital. Catherine will be able to witness and pray with her patients. She actually was able to do that in America too, but it's hospital dependent there. And so that's going to be something we're excited about. But also on top of that, we wanted a group that we could live next to and directly minister to. So I'll point out, this is our hospital that we're going to live on. This is the hospital, and there's a nursing college there. And so the nursing students would live right here, and we're going to live right here. And so we live really close, and the church we're going to attend is right here. It's about a 200-person national church. And we loved when we visited that there was 120 nursing students. Well, there was 30 at the time. It was the first year. But this year when we go back, there'll be 120 right there for us to disciple. And right next to us, our neighbors. In fact, in Africa, the capacity of the police is not very high, so they're not able to catch bad guys very often, and so people don't go out at night. Once the sun goes down, you just stay at home. But if you live this close, we can still socialize with the nursing students. And just think about how much socializing you would cut off if you couldn't go out at night. And so we realized if we could disciple these nursing students, well, then that gives us a lot more time, and it's a lot easier to have relationships with them. Malawi also speaks English as a second language, and if you get educated, and the nursing students are well educated, they speak it really well. And so even though we're going to spend a lot of time to learn their local language, Chichewa, materials are much harder to find in their native language than having English materials. And so on the next slide, you'll see we're going to bring over, this is just two of the five books we're going to bring over. Instead of just doing topical, which can work really well in the United States, we take for granted how much training you have. Like going through Firehouse and getting to have so many people that know so much about Scripture and having so many people that have so much education. Over there, most of the pastors did not have biblical training. They may not even graduate from high school. They may not even know how to read. And so you can start to imagine what it looks like to speak, to learn from someone that has less skills. In fact, in their nursing classes, they only have 5 science books for 30 kids. And so they may own, when it comes to the Bible and other books, like the Bible's it. So they don't really have these other books to learn about the Bible. And so when we do our Bible studies with the nursing students, we want to read one of the books of the Bible as long as read one of these books. And these books really go through kind of fundamental things of like, what's the difference between a poetic book like Psalms and a book like a prophetic book like Isaiah? What's the difference in that style? Like, how do we read them differently when we learn from them? How, like, what is the difference between Paul's letters and then the Gospels and things like that? And so just some really fundamental things that can help them no matter what they're trying to, like, learn about in the future. And we hope to disciple them, not just to be better for themselves, because we can only individually disciple so many people, but we want them to disciple other people, and that's pretty quickly. We would like probably the second year for some of the people from our first group to start teaching other people. And so that's kind of our hope and dream. And when they graduate, we hope they go off. They already have to go off and serve in a local village across the country, that they can be the person in their church that can really just turn their village church around. Because Christianity is very widespread there. It's a lot like Guatemala in that way. For you guys that got to do the Guatemala trip, that everyone has heard a simple gospel message, and most people are comfortable with claiming Christ. They're not necessarily comfortable with what that entails, though, on changing, like removing sin from their life, or getting rid of other gods, or witchcraft, or other things. And so making them understand that, and then also for the people, like we think some of the nursing students we met were very passionate and didn't seem to have some of those other things, but knowing how to stay away from like dangerous gospels like prosperity gospel and some other things that are easy to twist scripture the wrong way. And so that's kind of our hope, is to go over there and they'll be empowered to do that. On the next slide, we'll let Catherine explain.
So that kind of wraps up what we're going to be doing individually and as a family. And that's a 3-year commitment, but maybe longer. But we also wanted to share just some things that really helped us over the past few years as we started really thinking long-term overseas, we're really going to do this and live away from America and our families, like the things that we've started to turn to as resources, just kind of to share with you guys. There's a book called Operation World, and it gets updated every 1 to 2 years. And this book contains every single country in the world, and it's just a couple pages on each country, and it just summarizes the population, the major religions, and then the major prayer requests. So if there's a particular country you're interested in, you can really quickly find this Christian resource to boil down, like, what's going on here? What do they need? And also, if you're just reading through it, you learn all these countries' names and you start to pray for these countries. It just really helps widen your view. And my dad was just mentioning to me that they actually have that online as well, so you don't have to buy the book. And then another way that you can learn more about the nations and keep up is to follow a missionary. So this is just an example of one of our newsletters, which have all been fundraising focused lately, but soon they're going to be more exciting, I hope. I know for us, as we supported different missionaries and got their newsletters, our minds started to really be open to the things their family was going through, the differences in cultures. Like, it really is like being on another planet for some of these other countries. And so it just really helps to open your view for that. And then the International Mission Board website. So International Mission Board is the mission board for the Southern Baptist Convention churches, which our church is a part of here. And so whenever the tithe is taken every Sunday, a portion of that goes to the International Mission Board. And their website has an awesome set of resources. And one of those things is every day, if you'll go to the next, this is just it blown up, they update prayer requests every single day of different missionaries or different countries, things that are going on. And so if you just want to incorporate that into like a daily part of your reading, it's just a really quick prayer request that helps you learn other countries' names, where they're located. I mean, you can get in as depth of this as you want, but that's just a really cool resource that they provide for prayer.
We know that prayer is it feels like the most important thing. And so don't underestimate the ability to pray, and praying specifically. And some of those tools we just showed you are able to pray specific. This one's a little more general, but when you read the world section of newspapers, you'll know very quickly when things happen. Like the other day in Nigeria, a school, almost 200 girls were stolen because this group doesn't want girls to be educated Western style. And so instantly, by reading that, I was able to just pray for those girls, hope that they are released and that they're safe and that this group gets, you know, justice. But if I hadn't read the newspaper, I wouldn't know that. And so everyone, or at least can have access to someone that does read the newspaper. So if that's not something you see as like, I'm more gifted at something else, but if I have a friend that can tell me when these things come up, having access to the world news, I think, is helpful. This one's a little more intense. If you really have a missionary that you love, a lot of countries do have English editions of their newspaper. Like Malawi, having English as their second language, they produce their newspaper in English. And so it's been easy for us to keep up with it. And if you really had a specific place, and I would really recommend, like, Operation World is great to get that grand spectrum, but find a few individuals, ministries around the world that you can focus on, because if you are always changing the place that you pray for, it's hard to really have some continuity to it. And so finding a few that you can hold down to while you're still learning about other places. On the next slide, one of the things we've learned by talking with different missionaries and people that are preparing majorly going out is that the biggest hindrance to people going in the mission field that want to go is finances. It's very hard to raise the money to go overseas, and it's very expensive. We couldn't believe when we were told that you're going to need to raise $6,000 a month to go overseas. We were like, what? You know, it doesn't cost $6,000 a month to live here. Isn't it cheap to live in Africa? Well, no, it's not cheap to live there. And then you have to buy plane tickets. And then when you realize that a lot of the budget is, you guys can see, like 40% is like basically what you would get paid in the States on the budget. The rest of it goes to other things. And so when people come to you in the future and ask you, and you hear like big numbers that they're living on, that's not necessarily money that they get to spend to, you know, buy their food and fun and all that kind of stuff. And so doing ministry is expensive. And so a lot of you guys in this room, some of you guys will go to mission field, some of you guys are doing short term now, but most of you will be supporters of missions. And so that is just as crucial and just as valuable. And we think that that's where there's plenty of people that are willing to go that can't get funded right now. So if the people that are in the States that funded more, we could be sending missionaries already. Like we think we're pretty far away from having everyone that's willing to go already to needing to inspire even more people. Even though if you want to go, we want you to be inspired. We want you to go, like, talk to us and, you know, or talk to even... There's a lot of people you can talk to about going. On the next slide, we'll show you. So when you think about $6,000 a month, each one of these people are a person. So we did almost 120, or not 100, is it 120? Yeah, about 120 sit-down visits with people. And you guys can see about 80 of them are supporters of ours. And you can see there's a lot of people that are sacrificing a lot. And we've been so humbled by that experience. But as future supporters, realize that, like, the way people get overseas is by you guys, when you guys get out of school and start, you know, making more money and get to have more autonomy of your paycheck, by you guys sacrificing and giving that money. And it's not just an individual, although there's a lot of individuals. You could decide, you know what, I want to give more money to the church because the money goes to the IMB. And so you can designate that too. And so it's like, there's multiple ways you can find a way, but taking an addition to what you give to the church and finding other ministries really helps this thing happen. Otherwise, it just doesn't happen. So, on the next slide, and then Catherine will talk.
This is our last slide. I just wanted to kind of wrap up a couple things you guys will be having an opportunity to in the next couple years as you graduate. With the international mindset, when you go to college, you will have this window of 4 years where you'll have opportunities that a lot of people would do a lot to switch place with you. Because when you're at college, you're going to have a lot of people from closed countries coming to your college, which means countries that you'll go to jail if you mention the name of Christ or try to witness to them. And so in your classes, we had friends of our own. Yeah, if you're in that country, sorry, would you go to jail if you mention the name of Christ? So in our own college classes here in Florida, we had people from Saudi Arabia and Iran and just countries where you cannot talk openly about Christ. And if you do it secretly, it could be a year or two before you even get to say his name. I mean, you have to be really careful. And yet for these 4 years, you can be friends with people and say anything you want to them. And you, by being friends with them, especially because they really are searching for friends in this crazy country that they're like trying to learn the language and make good grades, by being really good friends with them, you open the door to their country essentially through them, because they can go back and have open doors to them that we couldn't have. And we were kind of explaining with the junior high group, like, once you graduate college, that door is slammed shut. And what we mean by that is, even if you become a minister on that college campus, like say through a campus ministry like BCM or Campus Crusade or something, or if you become a college professor, you will get fired. You can get fired if you openly witness or talk about Christ. And so even if you're still in the college and you're like still staying in that realm purposely to reach out to those students, like things just change when you're no longer a student and you're suddenly employed. And so, we just want to encourage you to take advantage of that and just be really aware of it. At most major college campuses, there's opportunities to reach out to international students, like really, like things are set up for you, like come to this pizza party and take them bowling. It's like already set up for you. It's so great. And so you just have so many opportunities as a college student. So I just want you to be aware of that and to look for those, because it's a really short time of your life that doesn't last long. And then the last thing is just kind of like our personal input. Be kind to third culture kids. So third culture kids are kids that don't grow up in the same country as their parents. And so Dave and I are American to the core. Like we have all the same fun memories of the late 80s and early 90s, like our childhood match. And when we're with our same age friends in America, we totally have the same identity and connection. But when you're a missionary kid and you grow up in Africa, but you come back to go to college, you're 18, you look American, you dress American, you don't have an accent, and yet you don't have any of the same childhood memories or cartoons or Christmas traditions, possibly. You know, like we'll try to do those things, but Charlotte will be different from her 18-year-old peers. Obviously, she's already awesome, but no, just kidding. She totally fell right after that picture. But, especially for you guys who are going to Christian colleges, you'll have a lot more missionary kids at those schools. Just please go out of your way to be friendly to them, because they basically are going to feel like they're studying abroad, and they're going to be, but they're not going to have the advantage of looking different or talking different. And so they're going to just have some insecurities that you would never imagine are below the surface. So just be friendly to them, because it's not their home like it is for you. So that's just our last plug. Yeah, if you guys have any questions, we're finished here.